The rich have always made the rules. Rules about tax savings, Social Security, required minimum distributions, financial do's and don'ts. But they don't tell you what those rules are. Because if you knew the rules, you could take advantage of them like the wealthy do. Where do you go to learn about these rules? And how do you take advantage of them for your benefit? Learn about your financial power on the Total Financial Hour with host Arif Halaby, Sundays at 11 a.m. on AM 870, The Answer. That's Sundays at 11 a.m. on AM 870, The Answer.
Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy, learn from Arif Halaby.
Hey, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. I'm Arif Halaby, the Total Financial Hour. All right, you'll hear me back in our normal studio every week now. I was out of town, but I had to bring it to you live, or as close to live as I could get in my other studio. But now I'm back in town here. So thank you so much for being a part of the show and indulging my once a year big vacation, which is what it was all about. But I still took time out of vacation to do it because, I care about you. You matter to me a lot. You're a part of my family, my life, right? Of course, an extended family. I'm not paying for your college or your next car payment. But I do care about you. And I care about what you bring to the show and your emails and your involvement. So thank you for being there. All right. I want to touch base on a couple of things as we move forward today. A lot of you have heard of this BRICS alliance, B-R-I-C-S, right? Brazil, Russia, India, China, right? You've heard of those, the BRICS alliance. You understand that, right? Well, these countries have gotten together, and now Saudi Arabia is kind of getting involved as well. So that's, I think, the S that they're talking about. But really where it kind of comes into play when you think about this is those are basically second and even third tier countries, economically speaking, not classiness and, you know, put your little racist shield away and protect yourself here. I'm not attacking it, but understand this, right? India has more people than China. India has more poverty than most of the world combined. But they also have more millionaires, right? You understand that, right? There are more millionaires in India almost than you have people in the United States. You understand that? Drive down the street, every man, woman, and child you see, and that person is a millionaire in India. Now drive down the street, and every man, woman, and child you see, times two that you can't see, are also living below the poverty level. So India is a very interesting example because it's both extremes. Brazil, same thing. China, same thing, right? So I go through this with you because I want you to understand something. What do they all have? They all have natural resources and a consumer pool of people that have yet to start really rising to the occasion of being a consumer, using things, being buyers of American products, goods, and services, whether manufactured here or overseas. So what is the United States doing? Look, I always like to play like, what is he thinking? Are you ever do that? And listen, I have been challenged more with somebody like Joe Biden. Like, what's he thinking? What is he getting at? Is he really that evil? Is he really that dirty? Can he really be that? Well, most of the time, I want you to know the answer is yes. It's the only solution. It's the only conclusion I can come to is that he really does hate the United States, really does believe the United States is a dirty, ugly country and needs to be fixed, or is just a place that he believes he's going to, rape and pillage on his way out the door. Right? That's pretty exciting to understand, because if that's really the case, then you can now know how to deal with them. So that's important, right? Once you know how to deal, once you know where they are, economically speaking, once you know how they speak economically speaking, then you can deal with them accordingly. And that's what I think a lot of people miss. Because these countries, Russia, China, India, etc., they're not a big threat to the United States as we stand at this moment. But they can be a threat where they're pulling African natural resources across the border, right? The largest deep water port is in the west coast of Africa. I remember when China was building this deep water port, and they were making it as a way to transport all the natural resources across the Panama Canal, which is what, by the way, they bought and they owned by who? Democrat Mr. Carter, President Carter, gave back to the Panamanians. That's why we have a second Panama Canal, because China came in and bought it. Oh, Arif, no, they didn't. They have a 50-year lease. Whatever. They have their military men and women stationed all around the Caribbean. Do you know that? They have their military men and women stationed all around Central America. All around. Costa Rica. Oh, no, Arif, not real. Yes, I have seen them. I have been there. Panama, Costa Rica, the Bahamas. You understand that? You name the island. St. Martin, Aruba, China, 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 China. Nobody understands. Nobody knows why they're here. I don't know. What are they doing? They're going to protect their interest, called the Panama Canal. So the United States had to build a secondary part. So what are these countries doing? Back to that devil's advocate. What am I thinking? What are they thinking? What's the reason? Very simple. I think the United States is holding back its ammunition called the oil reserves. This is putting on the other hat. I want to be fair and honest with you. What would I do? Let them use their resources. Saudi Arabia. Let Russia use their resources. Let Venezuela use their resources. And then the United States comes in and floods the market with oil, floods the market with natural gas, brings down the cost back down to $20, $30, $40 a barrel. And if they do that, those countries have to compete at a much lower rate than it costs for them to pull it out of the ground, which means their infrastructure, the BRICS infrastructure that is pulling the natural resources, pulling the oil out of the ground, is doing so at a loss. And now we can control and manipulate their economies without ever firing a shot. Will they allow that to happen? Do we have the courage? Do we know when to ready, aim, fire? Right, and pull the trigger of the oil exploration and the natural gas exploration. I don't know. I don't know if the U.S. has that. I don't know if we've convinced ourselves that we're not going to do it, not going to do it, not going to do it. Okay, now, fine, pull the trigger, go. Maybe. But I think ultimately what happens is it will depend on the political will in the White House. Because if that is our objective now, is to let Saudi Arabia drain its oil resources, Venezuela drain its oil resources, Mexico, right? Under Bill Clinton, you realize Mexico was on the verge of ultimate economic collapse. They needed $30 billion. You can look it up. $30 billion at a loan. And Bill Clinton's administration gave it to them. Why did we do that? Because we knew they would pay us back with oil. Because they're right here. Right across the river. We can go collect it. Send six guys down there and go get it, right? I mean, we're here. And they did pay it back. We made money on the deal. We made a profit as a country. So good. But it was much less money than what it was going to cost to have a flood of Mexican middle class and lower income people flood across the border, which is probably what would have happened if there was an economic collapse. Can you say Venezuela invading Colombia? So I shared this with you. Because there's a lot of talk with you guys. Arif, what about the devaluation of the dollar's importance across the world? I see it being an issue for sure. But I also see the United States understanding that it is definitely a lot more mature. Because if we turn around and bring back in our influence across the world when it comes to economics, then the value of the dollar starts to increase. And the use of the dollar as a reserve currency starts to increase. But it all depends on who is in the White House. You know it, I know it. If President Trump wins re-election again, coming up, we know he's going to be in for a heck of a fight. Right? He's going to have to drain the federal agencies. Listen, some of them are men and women. They're good people. Right, that are supporters of him. But you have to go in and get rid of the Department of Education across the board. You just say, forget it. There's a Department of Education for the feds, for the state, for the county, for the city, for the district. How many do you need? right? Go forward. Go. When I was a police officer and I worked in administration, I did that for a couple of years. And I would write a memo, right? I was just a lowly police officer three, right? I was the worker bug. And I would write this memo and then I would give it to my supervisor. And then he would get it and would red mark this and red mark, just like high school, red mark this, circle that, rewrite this. Then he would give it back to me. Instead of rewriting it himself, he took the same time to do what I would do on the computer. And then I would type, 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 give him the corrected one that he wants. He would look at it and say, okay, that's great. Every once in a while, maybe one out of three times, I would have to rewrite a couple things. No, I don't really like the way this sounded. So he would rewrite it and send it back to me. All right. Now I would get it, rewrite it the third time, send it to him. Got it. Love it. Then he gives it to his boss. My boss's boss, right? She now looks at it. Oh, red lines this, underlines that. Sends it back to me, back and forth, and then you know, this. But this goes on and on. Then her boss gets it. By the time it goes up three or four levels of the chain, it is almost, not quite, but almost identical to the way I originally wrote it. But you see, everybody along the version, along the way, wanted to be important. They wanted you to know that they paid attention, that they matter, and in fact, I'm your boss. Don't forget who I am. Now, you guys know this when your boss will correct my boss. Listen, have you said this? My boss doesn't even know how to do my job. I know how to do my job better than they know how to do their job. They don't even know what they're doing. Remember that story? I have to teach my boss how I do. Now think of it. You've got the Department of Education for the federal government. You've got the Department of Education for the people in the United States who tell the state. And then they turn around and they redo it. And then now it goes back up the chain and everybody has to give their 2 cents. And then it comes back down the chain. And now by the time you're done, you're like, hey, excuse me. Hi. Hi there. Yeah. Yeah. Hi. I'm a teacher. Can't we just teach reading? I mean, I get the whole gender this and DEI that, but I'm just a reading teacher. Can I just teach kids how to read? Because if they learn how to read, man, that's a gateway to social studies, to government, to law school, to medical school. They could actually learn how to read anything. But I have to teach them how to read first. And then you can teach them science. But science doesn't come before reading. So everything starts with reading. You understand that? So imagine that is a big deal, right? Because if you start thinking about that, then you realize, what's the job of an elementary school teacher? It's to lay that foundation. So answer me this question. Why is it that Baltimore schools, Chicago, LA Unified, New York, 20, 40, 50, 80% of the students in high school are not even reading at a 10th grade level or even an 8th grade level? Some can't even do math, basic math. How are you going to put these men and women out in the field of life when you have everybody and their mother of these federal and state agencies teaching them, telling them what to do, what not to do, go forward, go backwards? And by the time we're done, we're right back where we started. And you have an exhausted educator who just says, can I just teach? I don't want to teach to this silly test. I just want to teach them how to read. You see my point? So when the nations, what's called the BRICS nations, have an issue, right? Brazil, Russia, India, China, etc., right? While these countries are involved, here's where I want you to think. The only way we're going to be able to compete is we're sitting back and letting them kind of burn through their natural resources, burn through their internal strife, is if we are positioned as a country economically to jump and to take it out. And the only way we can do that is if you have an administration that comes in and starts cleaning house. Because you have to bring down the expenses. I just picked on the Department of Education, but you can go to Department of Energy, minus the group that handles nuclear facilities, right? It's part of the Department of Energy, but it's just gotten so big. Right, the reason President Obama bought $1 billion with a B, billion rounds of ammunition, and stored it in warehouses all across the country, by the way, from Columbus, Ohio, to Dallas, Texas, to Austin, Texas, to Jackson, Mississippi, all the way across the country. Billions of rounds of ammunition are in nondescript warehouses along with massive amounts of ammunition, vehicles, other incendiary devices. Basically, there's many stockpiles and sometimes major stockpiles all across the country, not just in military bases. Why did President Obama do that? Why did he train IRS agents? Why did he train postal carriers and postal, not postal carriers like you see on the street with the little blue uniforms, but postal inspectors? Why did he train them to carry a firearm? Why did he give them firearms to inspect mail? Did you ever ask why a billion rounds of ammo? Why have 80,000 IRS agents trained to carry a firearm? What are we doing? Didn't we have local police for that? Highway patrol for the highway, city police for the city, interstate stuff, right? Somebody grabs somebody in California and kidnaps them and takes them to Arizona. Okay, the FBI is now involved. Bank robbery, well, it's a federal crime because banks are located in many states. I get it. So we should have a federal agency. They're not handling local liquor store holdups. No. The FBI doesn't go in and say, wait a second, you just robbed from a nail salon and all the people, give them their money back. No. Pretty simple. Should be, anyway. Everybody just handles their own little area. But now we have the federal agencies from ATF down to Border Patrol down to Marshals, right? You have layers of law enforcement all across the board, which means layers of leadership. You see, that's where the dollars go. They don't go to the men and women on the street. The dollars go to those administrators who drive the brand new cars, the take-home cars. And, you know, the city of L.A., LAPD is no different. When I was a Los Angeles policeman, I can tell you, I remember being with a good commander. Maybe a deputy chief, a high rank at the time. And he was a good guy. Everybody liked him. He was in charge of the Valley Bureau. They send me in there. I'm a 22-year-old kid. Arif, go in there. Maybe I'm 24, whatever it was. Go in there and do a vertical staff meeting. We select you to go represent us at our division for a vertical staff meeting. So I go to this Van Nuys station. I had worked there sometime before. Now I'm there as a vertical staff meeting. And right, they have a few of this rank and then a couple higher and then a couple of each, all the way up. So I remember, okay, what is your concern? What can we do better? What can I do to help you? Everybody's given their 2 cents. So comes my turn. This will kind of give you a little picture into my future. I raise my hand and I say, you know, Deputy Chief, I drove here with a car that has 175,000 miles on it. And yet for me just coming here, normally I'm chasing bad guys, I'm going over curbs, having to do high-speed pursuits, slam on my brakes, speed up, make high-speed turns, all doing it safely and protecting the public and myself and ultimately the suspect. I peeked in the window, which I did, and I saw that his car was brand new because it was parked in his parking space. It had 1,700 miles. I go, you have 1,700 miles. I have 175,000 miles. Why do you get the new car? We should have the new cars. They're safer. They have analog brakes. The car that we had in the police department did not have analog brakes at the time. We skidded out in floods and rain and slammed on our brakes. All sorts of things. And you're telling me. So, of course, he said, well, that's a good point, Arif, or Officer Hallaby. I will let you know, of course. I'm still waiting. I do know that he did live in same neighborhood, well, maybe a couple neighborhoods away from me, but the same part of the city that I lived in for a while, because I would see him running down the street, you know, exercising. But I still never heard from him one of these days. But most likely my career was pretty much sealed at that point anyway. Everybody else was wanting to know about promotions. How do I move up? How about you just do your job? Right? Is that hard? So anyway, the president of the United States is going to have to come in and make some changes. Pare down. Why? Because we have to spend less money than we earn. When you do that, you can create an ability to pay off some of this debt, which replaces the power that the United States has today with more power, similar to what we've had just 10, maybe 15 years ago. Because then the value of your dollar, the purchasing power of you, your dollar, will go up. And then your retirement income doesn't have to be as high, does it? You could actually live the same or better quality of life without having to make as much money. Oh, Eric, if I don't have 10 years. No, no, no. This does not take 10 years. I will tell you, my friend. Did you see how quickly it got screwed up? 3 years. 3 years ago, we were one way. 4 years ago, we were one way. Today, we can turn it around just as fast. 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I don't mean all, you know, everything's great. It'll take a while. But on track, power, back to the United States, influence, back to the United States. Couple of years. Just like Ronald Reagan, it didn't happen overnight. When Ronald Reagan came into power, right, and he had 18% interest rates, it took him a minute. He had to lower taxes. Oh, you're going to hurt everybody. You're going to change the world. It's only for rich people. He said, no. When you lower taxes, more money will come into the economy and flow around the economy. When more money flows around the economy, they can tax the same dollar more than once. Did you know that? When I spend $100 at the grocery store, I saw this interestingly enough recently, and I want to bring it to your attention. I didn't make this part up. But it was the difference of using cash versus using a credit card. It's why I'm committed to using cash as often as possible. Here's why. When I go into a merchant and I use a $100 bill, the merchant receives, guess what? A $100 bill. Then takes it and pays his supplier. Then that supplier takes it and gets her hair done. And then that supplier goes and gets their nails done. And then that supplier, you get it? And after that $100 has been spent 10 times, guess how much is there? $100 still. Still in the hand of a consumer. Now, there are taxes inside of that, I understand. So the government's going to have a piece of it each time. But what if you use a debit card or a credit card? What if you use a credit card? Let's talk about that. 2.5%, 3%. Let's call it 2%. So I give $100 to the merchant. The merchant receives $98. The merchant goes to buy something for $100 but can't because he only has $98. So he now spends $98, gives up another $2 or so. You see how quickly we will be spending $100, each of us, and 40 or 50 transactions later, $100 is now worth what? Zero. Where did it go? The bank, Visa, MasterCard, American Express. You realize the dollar didn't change. It's still a dollar. It's still $100. It's still, but it changed hands, didn't it? It went from your hand in my hand or the merchant's hand to the bank or Visa, B of A, Wells Fargo, etc. You follow me? When they take a piece of every single transaction, and guys, it's a lot more than 2%. I just want you to know. By the time you do the math, it's closer to 3. So how many times does 3 go into 100? About 33 times. So after 33 transactions, $100 doesn't exist anymore in a consumer's pocket. It goes to the hedge funds. It goes to the mutual funds. It goes to the people that own Visa and B of A and MasterCard, right? You get it? It leaves your hand in my hand and the small businessman and woman's hand. That's what I don't like. So the difference is we have to have the dollars available in our pocket. We have to have the dollars available. And the only way to do it on a macro scale, which is what I'm addressing today, is simple. It's to get the right person in the White House. It's for you to be in the right state. So when you pay taxes, it's used properly, or at least as proper as possible, not as corrupt as possible, which is what California, New York, and even Washington State are loaded with corruption. Oregon, loaded with corruption. Illinois, loaded with corruption. So you've got to create an opportunity for the playing field to even exist for us to succeed. And that's how we do it. One, by using cash all the time. Two, by voting in the right people so they will undermine this crummy system and put together something that gives us a chance. Stay with me after the break. 888-99-RETIRE. I'm Arif Halaby. We'll be right back.
Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now Arif has a plan for me, higher income strategy. Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy, learn from Arif Halaby.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for staying with me. I'm Arif Halaby. Grab your pen and paper again, 888-997-3847. And my email address for your questions that I answer sometimes here on the program, sometimes with you directly, depending on the appropriateness. Sometimes I'll delay answering them because I want to wait to see if others have the same question. I like to kind of bring those questions together, see kind of what the mood of the room is, if you will. My email address, Arif, A-R-I-F, that's Arif, at tfswealth.com. So let me spell that for you. T as in Tom, F as in Frank, S as in Sam. So TFS Wealth, WEALTH.com. That's Arif at TFSWealth.com. All right. Social Security. Here's some of the issues that we have with Social Security coming down the road. You've heard me talk about it. And if you haven't, I'll mention it to you again here. 2033. They actually say 2034, but I think it's a lie. Here's why I think it's a lie. I think it's a lie because I don't think the full impact of people retiring sooner through COVID, through those 2 and 3 years, and people not putting in for those 2 and 3 years. Because remember, when the government gave you money, it didn't take any taxes out to put into the Social Security system. So when, what was it, 30, 40%, whatever it was, that people weren't working, they weren't creating a wage, they didn't have earned income, then no money was going into Social Security from that person. So what you ended up with is a group of people who are, some decided, I'm just going to retire now. I'm 64. I was going to wait a couple more years, but forget it. COVID's here. I don't know when it's going to end. I need my money now. I want it now. Give it to me. So right now they say 2034. I think it's going to be 2033. And it's slated to cover around 2/3, depending on who you listen to, 66% to 70%. Some say 80, but I don't know. Let's call it 70. Better to be safe than sorry, as they say. The other F word. Safe. I know it's not F. Otherwise, it'd be FAFE. Right? No, I do not have a lisp, but I do have my braces in. So you can. The FAFE word. I don't like safe. I don't like fair. There's a couple words I don't like. Those are some of them. My point. 2033, Social Security is going to send you a note that'll say, hey, you were supposed to receive $2,000 a month, but hey, listen, we only have enough money for you for $1,400. Sorry. Over the last 2033, over the last decade, the politicians didn't get involved. They didn't stand up. They didn't have courage. They didn't make a decision. So you pay the price. But you know what? A whole lot of people are not talking about, myself included, just not something that came onto our radar. 2031, which I think is going to be 2030. That is literally around the corner. The trust fund for Medicare, hospital insurance. It's slated to be, guess what? A 10% cut, 11% cut. And very soon afterwards, it could have probably dropped to 20% cut. Do you understand what that means? That means there isn't enough money. Hospitals are already getting cheaped out a lot. Doctors are already getting cheaped out a lot. You're not paying as much as you should for Medicare. You should be paying a lot more. I know you're mad, but don't be mad at me. I'm not. Listen, math is math. You should have been paying more the last decade. And you didn't. So there isn't enough money going into Medicare. I'm an employer. And I'm an employee of my company, so I got to pay for it on both ends. Do you know that? If you're a small business owner, you get hit on both ends of that. Understand this. I have to pay income tax of 30%, but I also have to pay 15% Medicare tax, self-employment tax. And I have to pay state of California tax of another 10. So let's do the math together, children. 10 and 15 is 25 plus 30, 55%. You understand? For every dollar I make above a certain amount, I only get to keep less than half. Wait, Arif. You don't pay your fair share. That F word again. You don't pay your fair share. All right, thanks. Meanwhile, Medicare is going to be done in 2031. Right? Listen, I'll give more on everything. I'll give more here, give more there. But you don't get anything from it. You know, my recent vacation, I was in Holland. Amsterdam, to be specific. Not a lot of Holland, but Amsterdam. Oh, Arif, we pay 70, 72, 75% in taxes. I'm like, are you kidding? Oh, yeah. But don't worry, because health care is free. Education is free. I'm like, yeah, everybody's riding bikes around town. Nice bikes, some of them, but most of them are rusty old beat up junk. And they lock them up. The locks are worth more than the bicycle. And I talked to one of the boat captains. We took a little tour. Talked to one of the boat captains. He said every year they pull out thousands of bikes from the different canals because people steal them, ride them, and then throw them into the canal. So that's great. You get free health insurance, free medical insurance, and then you get to ride a bike in all sorts of weather. Hot, cold, muggy, wearing your dress, your suit, your nice dress shoes, whatever it is. But how do you pick up a date? It's got to be a taxi, right? Are you taxi worthy? Your first date, I don't know, when you're in Amsterdam, is it your first date? I meet you there? Is it worth, maybe there's rankings. Taxi, Uber, meet you there, ride a bike, get on the handlebars. I mean, what date is it that first date, second date? I don't know the ranking. I've not dated anybody living in a place like that. But hey, don't worry. You get free health insurance when you fall off your bike in the middle, because nobody pays attention, by the way. We saw one accident in the first day. Somebody got tagged, a bike rider. It's not a surprise. But you ask yourself, is that what you want? Do you want a Sweden, Norway? Norway, zero, that we saw, zero people using cash. Everybody used debit or credit card. And it's on their phone, mostly. Beep, tap their phone. I asked somebody in line, I go, how come you don't use cash? They go, oh, we don't carry cash. I haven't carried cash in years. They're on a full digital currency. Did you know that? It's like, oh, that's interesting. You see, if you think Europe is going to be the savior of the United States, it is literally the opposite of savior. They have conditioned people that they don't need a firearm. They've conditioned people that freedoms don't matter. They've conditioned people that freedom of speech ends when you hurt my feelings. You see, you don't need freedom of speech if I agree with you. It's called a conversation. If I agree with you, do you understand the difference? But at freedom of speech means, remember the 70s, my baby boomer friends? I may not agree with what you say, but I will fight to the death your right to say it. Remember that? It was on a t-shirt, banners, billboards, whatever. I may not agree with what you say, but I will fight to the death your right to say it. So last week, it might have been over the weekend. I saw it in a report this week, though. What did we see? Dearborn, Michigan. Place my mom grew up not too far from. Dearborn, Michigan. What do you got? You have people without an accent, meaning they were probably born and raised here. If not from such a young age, they were born and raised here, meaning they're American citizens. They could be naturalized American citizens, for all I know, even with an accent. My dad had an accent until the day he passed, so it could be both. The point is, you can't distinguish them by closing your eyes from a white guy born in Des Moines, Iowa. No. It's just somebody speaking. And they're Arab, like half of me. Except they hated this country, like none of me hates this country. They were full of racism, anti-Semitic, disgusting anti-American speech. And I think we need to let them speak as loud as they can. I think we need to let them speak and say all of their disgusting, evil, dirty things. Why? So that you will know who they are. You will know that the Democrats support them. You will know that they support Democrats. You will know who and what they stand for. That's what I want to know. Who does somebody like that feel comfortable voting for? Oh, I got it. I'm the other way. Oh, you're going this way? I'm going to turn around 180 degrees, go the opposite. Bingo. You see, when you cover up their speech, then you don't know what they stand for. Now, the left will tell you, oh, you're going to have to monitor speech so that it doesn't hurt people's feelings. So you have to monitor speech so that we can correct it or keep it from impacting and infiltrating. Listen, I don't care about that. Conservatives want to have free speech so that we think we can convince you. We can lay out the set of facts. We can give you reasons, like Candace Owens and Sage Steele and many other African-American Americans, right, that were born here and grew up here, but were born in a family or in a group of neighborhood that hated America. Racism, and every time you turned around, you picked up a bag of cookies, racist. The institution of the Department of Motor Vehicles, racist. Everything racist. But free speech allowed them to hear things that swayed them in the other direction. Many people I know, recovering left-wing addicts, right? Recovering MSNBC listeners and watchers, accidentally landed on a Hannity and Combs episode, hearing both sides. Accidentally landed on a Tucker Carlson or a Glenn Beck when he was on CNN. They stayed. Heard the next phase and went, huh, that's interesting. Never thought of it that way. Oh, that's why they, oh. You see, that's why we want free speech. That's why you have to fight for it. Because if you take away free speech, you bring out firearms. The more speech you have, the less chance of violence and weapons. You see, I'm watching on the local news this week after returning from my trip. And what did I see? Oh, assault weapon this and assault identified by the sheriff's department as an assault weapon. No, no, no. That's stupid. Nobody would say that ever. Police officers don't call any, at least not an educated one, not a police officer, sheriff, deputy, anybody that doesn't have an agenda. They would call it a firearm. Because an assault weapon doesn't exist. It's a made-up term of the news media. Well, the anti-gun news media, really. There's no such thing as an assault weapon. Oh, it's a weapon of war. They are not allowed. They are already illegal. They do not exist. Oh, listen, automatic weapons are not allowed. That is what is involved. A firearm that fires more than one round at a time, those are military weapons. So, in other words, free speech gives you the ability to have educated people. That gives you the ability to go, oh, now I understand what you mean by that. Both sides. Right? I don't mind softening some of my positions on certain things if I hear the argument and it makes sense. Right? Conservatives are logical. We sit back and we go, oh, okay, I never thought of it that way. All right, I gotcha. Now I understand. All right, I don't need to be 100% on this. I can give a little bit. I'm open for that. What I don't think is these people that we give our money to, both in taxes and in our goods and services, what I don't understand is, you know, these people hate you. I mean, you understand that, right? They hate you. It isn't that they dislike you. They could take it or leave it. Take you or leave you. No, no, no. They hate you. They think you are a white Christian nationalist. And if you're Jewish, they still think you're a racist. And if you're not Jewish and you're not white, they think you are a sold out black African-American. Right. Look at what they did to Larry Elder. Look what they do to Candace Owens. Look what they did to Ben Carson. Sage Steele now is coming out. Look what they did. Ayanna Hirsi. I can't remember her name. Forgive me for a minute. right? These are black men and women, African-American men and women. And as they would have you say it, Americans of African descent, who have nothing in common with an African, with a lot more in common with a white guy from middle America than from anybody from Africa. Zero culturally, just the color of their skin, something, by the way, you can't control, just so you know, unless you're Michael Jackson, I guess you can control it, but nobody has that kind of money. You can't control the color of your skin, who your parents were, where you were born. Why are you going to take something from me or give something to me? Don't give me anything. Hell, Air, if you're half Lebanese with a mom from Michigan, you should get $50. No, thank you. I'm good. Hey, let me work for $50. I'm happy. I'll bust my hiney. I'll do it better than anybody. I'll work on the weekend. I'll earn that $50. Oh, Arif, not everybody's like you. Right. Because they prefer to sit in the dark, in the basement, play video games, pretend to be somebody else. Because, you know, that's the game, right? The video game world is pretending to be somebody else. You hate your life so much that you have to be somebody else. I know. All of us did it for a period of time. Board games, right? Why do I watch an hour and a half, 2 hour movie that there's a Superman or James Bond character or Tom Cruise when he's normal? You know, why? fighter jets and because every man, if you have an ounce of testosterone left in your body, thinks a part of you is that. And then you walk out of the place and you feel bad. Yeah, that's right. I'm bad. I don't mean bad like in horrible, but bad as in the 80s bad. Right? Look, no different than when I used to be involved in martial arts pretty heavy, black belt. I used to fight. You'd walk out of a tournament, a UFC type tournament, or we'd watch it on a big screen or something. You walk out of the tournament and you had to watch yourself because guys had watched 2 and 3 hours of fights. And they were all in it and fighting for, you know, rooting for their guy. And then you walk out of that club or the bar or the place we'd watch it, wherever it was. And you didn't want to bump into anybody. They were juiced up just enough. And I don't mean in alcohol or drugs. I mean, just that testosterone, that adrenaline that was. You just kind of minded your own business and quickly got to your car and drove away. Because every man has that ability to protect, to provide, to be there for his family. That's what we do. When you take that away from us and you fill us with, well, pharmaceuticals, you fill us with junk food, you fill us with feelings instead of thinking. You see, women can think, of course. Are you crazy? I'm married to one of the smartest ladies I know. My mom is one of the smartest ladies I know. My sisters, my gosh. Right? I had three sisters. One could beat me up. One could run faster. One did better in math. Right? So I never thought of them as less than. I thought of them as having special skills. I had other skills. Right? I could play baseball better than them. I could run faster when I got a little older. Right? Things change. But when the day came to me, when my dad came to me one day, I don't know, my just younger than me sister. So I have one older and two younger. So the one just younger than me, we got in an argument or something. We're at the end of the driveway. And my dad saw it, didn't say a whole lot. It was either later that night or the next day, right? He had a knack for that. Never bringing it up in the heat of the moment. It's wisdom, man, wisdom. And just sat me down and said, "Hey, Arif, do you remember, where's that friend of yours? That friend when you were in you know, kindergarten, what was his name over at that school in Panorama City?" I said, "Oh, you mean Tom?" He goes, "Oh yeah, Tommy. What happened to Tommy? You guys were best friends. Remember you used to hang out?" I go, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What happened to him?" I don't know, Dad. I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. 30 seconds later, he goes, "Hey, remember that one kid in, what was it, fourth grade? Marky? Remember you guys played baseball together and you thought he was your best friend?" And he was. I mean, you guys hung out, you swam together in his pool and you guys had a good time. Remember that kid? "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What happened to him?" I go, "I don't know, Dad. I don't know. It's been a couple of years." He goes, "Oh, huh." He goes, remember when you were in kindergarten, your younger sister was your sister. You remember when you were in fourth grade, your younger sister was still your sister. Do you know in 10 years, your younger sister is still going to be your sister? Do you know in 40 years, your younger sister is still going to be your sister? Our family doesn't go away. Your friends come and go. So treat your sisters with the same amount of respect and more than you do your friends. I mean, okay, so what was that, 50 years ago and I still remember like it was yesterday? So guess what speech I had with my kids when they got into little spats together? Same. Same. Wisdom, man. I'm sure, I don't know, I like to think he took it from his dad and he had a wise dad and all those things kind of trickled down. I don't know where he heard it from. Somebody, maybe now you hear it from me and now you share it with your children someday. Right? That's how we do it as men. You learn to protect and provide. From that day on, nobody talked about my sisters, pushed them around. In fact, almost all of my fights as a kid, probably 10 fights, maybe two, except for two of them, were because somebody was picking on my sisters. Almost all of them. Until I became a policeman. And then it's because I wanted to take you to jail and you said no and I said yes and then I won. Except for the one time the guy got away, but I think I got him. Sometime later, we got him again. Right? You see the difference? The job of a man in the household. Now, listen, sometimes, ladies, I know sometimes it's you. You have to. For circumstance, different ones. Someone's passed away or divorce and you're leading the family. I get it. But you have to raise your young men, raise your boys to be men. And only a man can teach them to be a man. I know, listen, this is going to ruffle some of your new age woke feathers. But they're the feathers that fall off anyway, guys, because they don't hold water. Right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe some of you have some courage to stand up and defend this idea. Maybe some of you don't, I guess. It means you have to teach your kids how to manage money. Manage your emotion. Oh, I want to buy. I know. Let's write it on the board in your room. Write the price next to it. How you earn money. And we're going to write that next to it. So in other words, this costs 4 hours of your time. Do you still want that? You're going to work for 4 hours to get this. Is it worth it? And we're not going to make that decision now because you're not an emotional person when it comes to money. Son, daughter, I'm going to strip that away from you. I'm going to help train you to manage money the proper way, which is with your mind. So we're going to write it on this board. We're going to come back in a week. If you still think you need to buy it, the emotion's gone, the feeling's gone, that adrenaline's gone. Now we're thinking, 4 hours of my time to buy this. Yes, I want it. Bam, we're going to go do it. Know what, Dad, Mom? I don't think so anymore. It's just not the same. Okay. Now you know. You see, give them the control, but give them the guardrails. You provide the guardrails, they have the control. They're steering the car, you can decide the speed. Right? Give them a little bit of, soon it's going to be going from a one-lane highway to a two-lane highway, to a five-lane highway. I get it. The guardrails are going to have to be wider as they get older and have more freedoms. Saw a young lady neighbor of ours recently, and I was surprised at how much she's grown in the last, I don't know, 6 months. She went from a little kid bouncing around to now a teenager, preteen, 13-something, and then you're like, oh, man, the troubles are coming just for the next few years. He's not going to recognize her, and then she'll come back. They always do. And it's usually the moms they give the hardest time to. So whoever it is that can relate to the kids, even if it's an uncle, even if you're a single mom, you get an uncle in, a grandfather, a neighbor, friend, somebody you trust to sit down and to be there for that young man, to teach him to control his emotions. That's why you get school shooters. That's why you get the violence. Because we've let this rain run free on a young man's emotions. Let's control that a little bit more. Stay with me after the break. Your emails. I'm Arif Hallaby. 888-997-3847. That's 888-99-RETIRE. Arif Hallaby on AM870 The Answer. Your place for news, talk, and information. Your emails. Coming up next on AM870 The Answer.
Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now Arif has a plan for me, higher income strategy. I'll retire comfortably, thanks to Arif Hallaby. Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy, learn from Arif Hallaby.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for staying with me, Arif Hallaby, the Total Financial Hour. This is the second hour of our show. Appreciate you being here, talking about your family's finances, your emails, getting out of debt, managing money, planning for the future. That's what it's all about. And look, the objective is to always kind of meet you where you are. Right. For a lot of people, your objective in life is to try to convince, if you work at a company, to convince the customer to buy your product. And often that's the case. Right. Sometimes people will come to my office. I always love this. Convince me why I should buy your product. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a short meeting. That's not my job. If you want some or part of your money safe away from the risk of the market, you feel like you've accumulated, at least in this account, maybe not everything, right? You've accumulated enough money that you can't afford to lose it. And the job of the money, here's the key, the purpose or the job of the money is to give you an income stream. Now, if you pass away, whatever's left goes to your family. That doesn't change. If you pass away and you set it up properly when you start the income stream, right? Let's say you put it in 2 years from now, 5 years, 10 years, you say, okay, give me a monthly check. But you set it up so that you and your wife or you and your husband would receive the same check if you pass away. You could do that. Then the income stream lasts as long as either of you are alive, right? You could do those things, but don't put it all in and then 3 years later say, give it all back to me and not expect to pay a fee or a penalty, right? A lot of fixed accounts, fixed annuities, fixed index annuities, there are no monthly fees, annual fees, quarterly fees, but there is a surrender charge. If you cancel early, you'll pay a fee. There are some accounts that will charge you a fee, but it's a cost for something. What am I buying? Oh, I'm paying a cost. I'm paying a fee, but I'm getting back a higher income strategy. Fine. You know it ahead of time. You say, yes, I like it. Take it. No, I don't want to pay a cost. I don't want to pay any fee. Okay, great. No cost, lower income strategy. I mean, you can adjust these things any way you want. That's why you set it up properly at the beginning. So that's our job. It's to help you get some or part of your money away from the risk of the market. Avoid putting an account in a place that doesn't belong. Meaning, if the job of the money is income, I don't want to put it into a place where growth is the key. And if the job of the money is growth, I don't want to put it in a place where income is the purpose of the money or the key, right? Okay, so they each have a different job to do. So keep this in mind as you start looking at some of the, places that you currently have your assets, your money, your retirement accounts, specifically your retirement accounts. So as you start to think about that, let me give you some top three things to worry about, three signs that you don't understand your retirement account. Ready? Number one, you are not adding to it on a regular basis. Because when you are adding to your retirement account, meaning you're still young, you're working, you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, even early 60s, right? You're still working. You need to add to this account each and every month. Why? Because of dollar cost averaging. Now, maybe it's every 2 weeks or every quarter, whatever it is, but systematically, you need to buy low, buy high. You're constantly accumulating shares. That's the job of the money. A mistake you don't understand retirement accounts is you are not buying regularly. You just put it in and left it. If it's in the market, you have to be buying regularly. All right. Number two, you don't have money set aside for income when you are in your 60s, let's say 55 years and older. You don't have any money set aside for income when you are 55 years or older, and you are only counting on pensions or Social Securities. Number two, are you counting on only pensions and Social Securities and you have not set aside money from your own retirement accounts towards income? Then you don't understand retirement accounts. And the third and the biggest, and if I had a drum roll, it's my weak attempt at a drum roll. If I had a drum roll, it would sound like this. All right. Da-da-da-da. You think your retirement account is a savings account. Now, what do I mean by that? You take your retirement account, and when your brother needs $50,000 to buy a house, you help him. And you pull it from your retirement account. And then you get kind of chastised by me because I say, do you understand, for you to take out $50,000 from your retirement account, in other words, for your brother to receive $50,000, you don't just pull out $50,000, you're going to have to pull out $75,000 because you have to pay any penalties or fees to the IRS. You're going to have to pay taxes to the IRS. And you just reduced your retirement accounts by $75,000, meaning you're not earning interest on $75,000. You're not going to be receiving income based on $75,000. And your brother receives $50,000. And I promise you, as sure as I am sitting here on a microphone, he will never pay you back. Never. Arif, you don't understand our family, our culture. You don't know, we're Filipino, we're Jamaican, we're Lebanese, we're Mexican. They will not pay you back. Raise your hand if you had a sibling or a cousin or a parent or a child not pay you back. All right, not both hands. Keep one on the wheel. You know they don't pay you back. They're not bad or evil or ugly. They just think of it as a gift. They think of you as richer than them, and they need it, and you don't. And when you ask for it, they ask you why you're greedy. They think of you as a dirty dog, and you just feel bad, and you stop asking. Okay, so if you're going to use my number three mistake that people do, and you're going to treat your retirement account as if it's a savings account and not an income account, meaning you can take out bits and pieces on a regular basis, your own pension, really. Just think of it like that, your own pension. Right? You're not going to call up Social Security when you're 74 years old and say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to die sooner than I thought. So just give me a check for everything I've ever put into Social Security, minus what I've taken out, of course. Can you just send me a check, Social Security? Hello? 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 Hi, are you still there, Social Security? Where's my money? And they're going to say, on the 10th of next month, you'll get another check. Thank you for calling. Click. You understand. That's not how Social Security works. You are building your own Social Security plan, your own pension plan, okay? So keep that in mind, because that is a huge part of why you are saving into retirement, is not to take out one big chunk. Why? Because the government taxes it at very, very high rates, almost half or sometimes more than half if you're in the state of California when you take it all out. Okay, so just be careful. All right, let me give you one of my emails. This is from Doug. Dear Arif, I'm a veteran of 12 years from the U.S. Air Force, and then I went on to become a pilot for a major airlines. I retired from them after 30 years of service at the age of 64. I now have a pension of $6,200 a month from them. I also have two rental properties and about $2 million saved in my retirement accounts. My savings accounts at the credit union and the bank has a total of $90,000. My brokerage account has more than $1 million. I am now beginning to receive Social Security, and it is $3,600 a month. My rental income totals $4,000 a month after all expenses. That gives me $13,800 a month to live on. That should be enough, but I do like to travel. My rental houses are in Florida, as that was a route that I regularly flew back and forth from Southern California. All right. So what do we have here, guys? His question is this. Ready for it? How do I make sure that I have enough money to live on, both to travel and to take out chunks of money as I need it, and in case inflation comes and I have to have a higher income stream? P.S. Do you think they will go after the pilots' pensions again like they did many years ago? All right, Doug, here's my lot of questions in there. Here's my answers. All right, first of all, a couple of things. As a veteran, you're entitled to certain benefits, but your income and your assets make it so that doesn't really count for you. So I'm not even going to go there on the veteran side of things. Okay, your rental properties are in the state of Florida. That was your route back and forth. Makes sense that you would have some connection there. Airline pensions are, I'll start with that. United Airlines and others have changed pensions substantially through the Pilots Association, bankruptcies. I mean, it's just a mess, right? So do I think they're going to do it again? I don't know. I would bet that they will. They've done it a couple of times already. So would I bet that they're going to do it again? Yes, I do. I mean, get it while the getting's good, I guess, because you're young. But I would expect them to make some changes if the recession hits hard. Maybe we don't have a recession. Some people are thinking we're going to get through this. I don't know. I don't. I just because we've never gotten through it before. So why would we be so skillful now? I don't know. The Federal Reserve doesn't strike me as a skillful group of people. But that being said, maybe we'll get through it without a recession, but I don't think so. If we do, people will stop flying. Gas prices will go up temporarily enough to shut down planes, and they will start filling up the Mojave Desert with airplanes all over again. Can you say COVID? Remember that? All right, so what do I think is going to happen with you, Doug? I think, number one, let's plan in the next 2-3 years, maybe 4 years, something like that, that you're going to need because of inflation or the cost of certain healthcare expenses. I would expect unions to start impacting their healthcare subsidy first, meaning I think they're going to reduce what they give you for health insurance, if they give you anything. You're silent on that on this particular email. So maybe nothing is mentioned or nothing is given, rather, because nothing is mentioned. But if they do give you anything on your particular pension when it comes to healthcare, medical insurance, I think they will start pushing back on that. If not, I think there's still going to be a need to have higher income. But I would start 3 years from now. So I would take a portion of this money. You have $2 million in saved retirement accounts. I might peel off $1 million of it, half of it, right? Which is about a third of your net worth when you add everything saved together, or your liquid net worth, rather. I would take about 30% of it, 30-35%, pull it aside, and just set it for the long-term future. Nothing happens, great, it's still there for you. Your beneficiaries inherit it. If something does happen, we've had all those years to grow, all that time to percolate and build up income, tax deferred. You're brilliant. Brilliant. But here's the strategy that I think takes the cake for you. Ready for this? Your ability to save more than $1,000 a month, roughly, just in income taxes by relocating to Florida. In other words, you are no longer a California resident. You are a Florida resident. You rent out your California house. Yes, you will lose the rent, some of the rent from Florida, because you're going to live there if you choose the same house. But the amount of money that you would receive from the California rental is much higher. Now, maybe you decide to do what others, which is collect 6 months in advance, collect 1 year in advance, collect a huge deposit. Right? Those kind of things can really help in a place like California if you choose to rent out the house in California. Maybe you want to come back someday. See, I think California will ultimately get its act together. I don't think in my lifetime it will be a good place to live again for a long time. I think we have to be worse off, file bankruptcy, get the liberals to finally vote the Democrats out of office, put in some people that make sense, straighten up some of the voting laws so that the real power of the person is noted and we're not just stuck in this silliness of all Democrats all the time, always winning every election forever. Right? It just kind of, it's kind of ridiculous. But I think that's going to take my kids' generation. I think we're not going to see it for 25 years, 30 years. So I think that's a long time between now and then. Maybe, Doug, you want to move back to California before then. Maybe not. I don't know, depending on the city you live. But I would not count on California recovering in the next 20 years. So maybe that means that you decide to move to Florida, whether you move into one of your rental properties or whether you're somebody that sells this house and buys one outright. Maybe you can find a wonderful place there that you want to live that's close enough to your rentals. Check in on them regularly. Maybe you downsize here and buy just a little condo so that you have a place if you want to come back and forth. Right? In other words, it's not your residence. It's your vacation property. Just flip it. But I would look at that as an option. That alone would save an income tax. Remember, based on your income, you're probably going to save right around $12,000 to $15,000 a year. That's more than $1,000 a month just in income taxes in the state of California. That's huge. That's real money, just so you know. That's a car payment and then some. That's a nice vacation every 6 months. That's a cruise somewhere for 10 days somewhere around the world. Right? Good living. So this gives you the chance to have a life that's completely different. Lifestyle that's different. Humidity that's different. That's why I'm not a super fan about living in Florida. The humidity is pretty heavy for me. I've been there in July. You feel like a 200-pound person is standing on your chest. But I guess that's the way it is in Texas and the Gulf and, you know, Mississippi and Alabama and, you know, maybe even up to Georgia and South Carolina, North Carolina. I don't know. Just not a fan of real humid areas. But that's me and my wife. Gratefully, we're on the same page with that. All right. Understand where I'm going with that. It's for you to have the idea of managing the income, kind of building yourself away from the risks of the future problems California is going to have, because I think they're going to go after you in a much greater way. Just so you know, you are the person that they call rich. You are the person that the state of California hates. You might say, Eric, if I can barely get by at $13,800 a month, but I get it. For some people, they would envy that. For others, it's their car payments and insurance payments, right? You haven't even begun to live yet. That's my house payment and car payment, says some. I understand. But I want you to get a sense of this. You are the person that will be attacked in the state of California. Look at what they just did to the minimum wage. Do you realize how many small businesses are going to flee? In fact, have fled the state of California because of the business climate. In other words, if you're stupid, stop doing stupid things. If you do stupid things and you have bad results, stop doing stupid things to get bad results. I mean, right? Hey, doctor, it hurts when I hit my head against the wall. Patient, stop hitting your head against the wall and pay the lady at the desk. I mean, you get it? But the state of California keeps doing dumb decisions. I can't help but think that it's because the depth of hate that they have for people that succeed and for anybody that does well. I don't know. I mean, do you know an answer? I mean, besides the typical platitudes that we all hear, right? They're ugly and they're hate us and I get it, whatever. But I want you to understand this. They're not going to change. Not until they run out of the state, right? Run out of town on a rail, as they say. It's not going to change. So you're going to have to build kind of a plan around being in Florida. And Doug, here's the big part of this. If you choose to marry someday, your spouse is not going to receive any of your pension, most likely, because you didn't marry while you were still employed. Many pensions are only eligible to be transferred to the spouse if you were married prior to the time that you retired, or sometimes a year. You have to be working for a year, then you retire, then you can, marry, work for a year, then retire, right? So you have to marry prior to that year. So there's different rules. But if you choose to retire, sorry, if you choose to marry after you've retired, which is now, someday, maybe not, but if you do, we have to have a plan B. And here's my plan B. I would have you take a portion of that brokerage account, whichever number you have, right? 10%, 20%, whatever it is, and use that $100,000 to purchase a life insurance policy that is one premium, single premium, that you can either choose to take money out tax-free later, or if you're dating somebody or you plan to be married again, make your future spouse the beneficiary, and she now receives that as her, quote, mini pension, right? It builds part of the difference. It makes up the gap of what else she would be inheriting from you, if anything. But by getting life insurance while you're the youngest and the healthiest you're going to ever be again, it might make sense to do that. Right? It gives you some freedom, and it gives you that ability to walk in the door and say, I want a plan B. All right, and finally, here's the other part. You need something to do. Doug, if you don't have a purpose, I get it. You would fly 300-400 passengers, whatever the number was, at a time. And their lives were in your hand, literally were in your hand. I hate the word literally, but it's literally. And those 300 or 400 people's souls were in your hands. People counted on you, co-pilots, to teach them, flight attendants, to be their workplace. There is no other place that you can go inside of that metal tube and be in charge except where you were. And now you're done. So now what are you going to do? So you know, you can fly private. A lot of private and small charter type flights. You know this already, but I'm telling others. Even after somebody reaches the age of 65, which is the new number, by the way. It used to be for airline pilots, on your 60th birthday, you were done. Now it's 65. So consider this, though. Charter airlines, Learjet, you can be certified in some of the Gulfstream jets and, you know, Boeing business jets. Very similar to the type of planes that you flew previous, probably, and that you were certified in. But you have to have a purpose. I have a friend of mine. He was a fighter pilot, then went on to become an airline pilot, still flies for the airline. But on the weekend, he flies his bi-wing plane, his open cockpit, like Snoopy, you know? Oh my gosh, you go from 500-700 knots per hour that you can go in these big jets down to this thing that maybe goes 110 miles an hour if you're lucky, right? You fly around at 80-90 miles an hour. You take off at, it's nothing compared as far as the speed goes. But he says it's so exhilarating. Number one, because it's just me. It's just my life that is on the hook. And that is not something that is that I can take lightly when I am in a plane full of other people. But when I can fly myself, it feels different. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. You never hear that kind of stuff from a pilot. But he has something to do. What does he do? Well, he flies in these little mini air shows. Nothing big, but he flies and does a little couple tricks and still enjoys things, and he has a plane that people come and look at and take pictures of, and he answers a bunch of questions. Still relevant. But when you retire in your 60s, guys, gals, and you don't have something, somewhere, somebody counting on you, thinking you're important, expecting you to be there, looking for advice, looking for wisdom, even just a helping hand. You know, our neighbor across the street, her dad would come over every once in a while. She's about 10 years younger than us, maybe 8 years younger than us. And her dad, she's one of the younger ones. Her dad's even older than my mom. But he was a spry 75-year-old guy at the time, right? Just a couple years back, 3-4 years back. And she needed something, and boom, he was in his truck right over to the house. My wife had a scooter with her ankle. She had ankle foot surgery. So she had one of those scooters. And she had a flat tire about, you know, a block from the house or so. So she had to limp and get that home. Well, he came over and plugged the hole, patched it up, and pumped it back up and put it all back together again. Right? The two ladies were home. My wife is wounded. Neighbor doesn't know how to fix it. She calls her dad. Her dad is there in minutes. Do you see my point? Had something to do. It was needed by the family. Grandmothers, can you watch the kids while we're going away for the weekend? Oh, absolutely. Purpose. Place. Something to do. All right, stay with me after the break. I have another email. This one is lengthy, so I'm going to read it with you. I'm going to read the whole thing because I think it's all necessary. So grab your pen and paper because there's a bit numbers happening as well. But it's very important for you to be with me on the Total Financial Hour. I'm Arif Hallaby. We'll be right back.
Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy. Learn from Arif Hallaby.
Hey, welcome back to the show. All right, grab your pen and paper. I'm Arif Hallaby. You don't have to write that down, but I'm Arif Hallaby on AM870 The Answer. Here's the email address, Arif, A-R-I-F. That's F as in Frank. So A-R-I-F at T as in Tom, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, wealth as in a lot of money, W-E-A-L-T-H .com. Arif at TFSWealth.com. Okay. And the phone number is 888-997-3847. If I can help you with your retirement questions, some of your retirement income strategies, please reach out. Maybe I can help. My goal is to give you the best direction when it comes to managing your retirement income, basically strategies to never run out of money. That's kind of the key. If you think somebody's going to make you rich, just not going to happen, right? I'm not going to make you rich. Any financial professional, I don't care if I work for any of the Merrill, Edwards, Jones, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Nobody can make you rich. It's a lie, just so you know. Because if they could, they wouldn't be doing this. My job is to keep you from being broke. Right? I don't know what their job is. It's just to hold your money, I guess. Charge you a fee. My job, my purpose is to keep you from being broke. Different than trying to make you rich. You understand the difference? One is protecting what you've worked for. The other says, oh, let's take a risk together, even though you're the one taking the risk altogether by yourself. Yeah, you just go do that. Reach back out to me. Tell me how that works out. Thanks. Bye. It's not our plan. Our plan is very simple. It's to keep you from being broke. Can't do that. Can't go back to work at 74, 71, 68. Not going to do it. Try to get the money back that the market or that a bad financial advice fees. Forget it. All right. So why is this next email important? It's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, because you need to understand the options. And then I want to put in some of my commentaries as of my recent trip to Europe. Okay. This is important. So I want to share with you some things that I observed specifically for bringing it up on a future show, but I want to share with you with this email because it happens to be timely. All right, dear Arif, we were planning on retiring to another country in Europe in about 3 years. However, I've been watching the growth of socialism, specifically in the areas of both healthcare and taxes. The tax rate in the country I was looking at has a cost of living top tax rate of over 60%. It is not uncommon for a middle-class person to pay more than 50%. Based on the income I am making now, quote, not what that I will be making in retirement, but now, it would be at 72%. I can't imagine how people live that way. That may not affect all of my income sources now, but I have seen how it has deadened the motivation and creativity of those that are born and raised there, especially the young people. I know they are used to living that way, free healthcare, free education, quotes around both of those, by the way, guys. But I am used to a level of long-term hope and motivation just to be better. My goal was to be better each and every year, not thinking I would be taxed at a greater rate each and every year. I do not believe we will move there after all. So our next choice is to find a place that fits our values and our freedom that we believe we should have. So we've decided it is between two places. Texas, just north of Dallas, or Nashville, towards Franklin, Tennessee. We have about $500,000 to buy a house. We can use it as a large down payment or to purchase outright. We have enough monthly income to decide either way. My pension is $3,800 a month, and my wife has Social Security at $2,900 a month. We have a total of $1.2 million in savings for retirement and about $220,000 in various credit union and bank accounts. Our rental property brings in an additional $5,400 a month after all expenses. All right, I'm going to pause there. I told you it was going to be a lot with numbers, so let's catch up where we are, all right? Their income is $3,800. That's his pension. Social Security for her, $2,900. And rental properties of $5,400. So let's just break that down. All right, that's going to be 67. That's 11. That's $12,100. I just did it quickly in my head. But $12,100 a month in income. Pretty good. Real good. All right, $12,100 a month in income. Yeah, you're darn right. In the European country, I didn't want to name it. They did write it down, but I didn't want to name it. In that European country, I looked it up, you're going to be at really close to 70% in taxes at $12,000 in income. All right. Their savings accounts for retirement, $1.2 million. All right. Their liquid money for emergencies, moving expenses, that kind of $220,000. All right. Let's continue. Our rental properties bring in $5,400 a month after all expenses. We will sell one of them when we move, which should give us an additional $600,000 available. But I want to leave something for my two daughters, enough for them to never have to worry about retirement. One of them is married to a man that is trying to be an actor, and the other has a city job with little hope of building any substantial wealth. Both of my daughters seem happy. All right. Here's my predicament. Your predicament. Her predicament. We can never control who our children marry. Doesn't mean they're mind marry bad or good. I think they're good people, actually. But you can't control it. Right? I tried to set a deal with my kids when they were younger, when they were all in their late teens, early 20s. And I said, hey, here's a deal. Me and Mom will buy you guys a house. Oh, they all got excited. I said, but I only want to control two decisions in your life. That's it, two. Going forward from today on. They looked at each other and said, oh, it doesn't seem that bad, Dad. Actually, it's pretty good. What's the decisions? I said, well, the first is who you marry. And the second is the career field that you work in. I'm still waiting. None of them took me up on that offer. So needless to say, we didn't buy them a house. So they didn't find the humor. And I did get a backhand in the shoulder from my wife, speaking platonically about abuse situations. I can understand. All right. Look, we don't understand. We know. Listen, if your goal is to have your kids be cared for, especially your daughters. There's just something about a family, a father especially wanting to care for his daughters, make sure they're never out on their own because often they get shafted in the divorce world. Here's what you do. Number one, setting aside the rest of this, I'll get into the details here in a minute, but I always encourage you to leave real estate to your children. And if you have your two daughters, that means one house for each daughter. I don't mean money to buy a house. The reason is this. If it's a rental property, you get the write-offs, which are substantial, while you're alive. then you can pass those write-offs again. In other words, you almost get a two-for-one deal on that. To your daughter, when she inherits the house, all of that earnings, tax-free. Even if you owe nothing on it, you bought it for $280,000, it's worth $700,000 when you die, you owe nothing on it, so there's $700,000 of equity, guess what? She gets all $700,000 tax-free. She can turn around and sell it the next day if she doesn't want to live there. Guess how much in taxes she pays on $700,000? Nothing. Under current law, zero, nothing. That's powerful. Now she can go buy the house that she wants to buy, if that's what she wants to do, or that's how you leave the will or the trust, right? So very important you understand that. Real estate and life insurance, tax-free both to the recipient when you pass away. Rich people leave real estate, life insurance, and Roth IRAs to their children. They leave also leave brokerage accounts, by the way. So if you have a Tesla or Amazon stock and you bought it for $100,000, today it's worth $1 million, and you pass away, all of that is tax-free to your children, full $1 million, right? So brokerage accounts, real estate, life insurance, tax-free, tax-free, tax-free. What is not tax-free to your children? Oh, your IRA. So what do I do with it, Arif? I am glad you ask. That IRA, that 401k, the job of your retirement account is for you and your spouse to live forever. That's the money. Take it down to zero. Drain it. Have nothing left at the end of the day. Have the last check bounce to the undertaker. I'm sorry, a lot of you guys listen. I don't mean it literally, but you get the idea. Right? Have that account be used for one purpose, and that's you. Don't feel bad about not leaving anything for the children or grandchildren. That's what those things are for. Real estate, brokerage accounts, life insurance. All right. You're more likely to have life insurance and real estate just because the cost of getting into those are much less and you can leverage it substantially, right? You put a down payment for $100,000 and you can control a $500,000 house. So a lot of room there. Okay, so got it? So kind of doing the back forward is I would make sure the houses are there for the kids. And then you can protect them. You can also put in the trust, and this is important as well, as a certified estate planner in trusts and wills, etc. I want you to know this. You can also leave that house in a trust where the husband can never own it. In other words, it is controlled by the wife, your daughter. She can never commingle it. He can live there as long as she allows him to live there. But she can never commingle it with his assets. So if he chooses to leave, tough luck. See you later. You and your new girlfriend is not in my house. All right. So those are some options. All right. Here's another thing. I've mentioned before to you guys, and I've even said, hey, reach out to me. And I don't know, maybe a dozen of you did. And we sent off the email link to you. I want to encourage you to do that again. I'm going to tell you once more. MarketWatch.com. And for those of you guys that used it and played around with it, the dozen or so that I sent out, reach back out to me. Let me know how you liked it, what you think. I've helped develop this website, so we put in a lot of suggestions over the years and helped develop some ideas on it, and et cetera. So if you see something that you like better than others, if you want something that's slightly different or a little bit clearer, let me know, and I'd be happy to pass it on and see if there's a way to improve the site. But it is marketwatch.com. It's hard to find it, really hard to find it on the website. I'm not sure why they made it so difficult. I think they need to rename it, actually, but whatever. It's a website that allows you, both of you, to select the features you like of the place that you will live. Then what you do is you click, apply, and it selects the top 10 places in the states that you selected. You might say, I want to live in Idaho, Nevada, and Colorado. And then it selects the cities that best match the criteria that you laid out in the program. Really powerful, guys, because what it does is it gives you that freedom to not have to go searching all around the country or all around a state. Because each of you complete this, and it gives you the top 10. All right. So, but you do have to agree on three states. I don't think you should select the entire country, but I do think you should select three states. You pick your three states. Then once you have your three states that you and your wife or husband have in common, do the survey separately, write down those cities, the ones that are in common. So out of 10, maybe three of them are overlapped. Those three, that's where you go visit. That's where you spend time. That's where you go to Market Watch or the websites, rather, for real estate, right? The Zillows or the Realtor.com or those types of websites. That's where you go to Trulia. That's where you go and start researching the houses and what the costs are and what side of town you want to be, in the north or south. That's where you travel to on the weekends and spend a long weekend, 4 or 5 days. Meet up with a real estate agent. I'll tell you my little, if this is something you do, hey, Irv, how do you pick a real estate agent in an area that, I will tell you what we do. I'll tell you what my clients do. All right. How we select the right real estate agent that works for you, et cetera. All right. That's very important, because now you're not spinning your wheels all over the country. You've really narrowed it down by a quantifiable way that is not built around emotion. Okay. Pretty important. All right. Here's what else we do, guys. I really like the idea of having you open up an indexed universal life plan for each one of your daughters, where you are currently the owner, and then if you pass away, they will own it themselves, where your daughters, where you can put money in, your daughters are the insured, and then they get to keep it. And when you pass away, they now inherit the ownership of it, and they have access to the cash value tax-free. Okay, so what we're doing is we're kind of building different strategies. How important is it for the kids? Fine, let's leverage that. Whether we're using life insurance on you or life insurance on them, real estate for you guys or real estate for rentals. And here's something else that I think is more important. Let's break down the two places that I happen to have been to, by the way. I've been to both of those places, Brentwood in Franklin, Tennessee, and Nashville, and Dallas and the surrounding areas. All right. The whole East Coast, the Carolinas, most of Georgia, Virginia, certainly places like Tennessee, they were never made. They're not all flat, by the way, right? They have hills and mountains and rivers, etc. So they were not made for two-lane and three-lane roads going in each direction. They were made for two-horse buggies to go through this town. So the traffic that you see in these small towns, especially on the weekends, when the weather's nice, people going up north or people going down south, whatever the case is, east, west, out to the river, out to the sea, it is horrendous. You think you're moving to Texas to avoid traffic? Ha, ha, ha. You think there isn't traffic in Florida? There are more roads built in Florida in the last 25 years, probably, than in the previous 200 years. But Florida is flat. But it costs a lot of money to build in that swampland. You got to dig deep till you find something hard that it can rest on. So this is not an inexpensive journey, number one, in a place like Florida. But more importantly, you cannot build them, period, in a lot of these Tennessee villages, Tennessee towns. So you're going to have an enormous traffic plan hazard all throughout those areas. You're not going to find any decent traffic patterns in certain Carolinas where you have established towns and antique village squares, right? They look like something out of a Norman Rockwell magazine cover. And they're not going to move the town over 300 yards to widen the street. You're just going to have a pedestrian-only street eventually, right? So I think you need to know that. But in Texas, it's different. It's flat. It's new. The state is acquiring land at record rates. Cities, counties are acquiring land at record rates, building schools and hospitals and bridges and roads and So if you are concerned about that level of quality of life, in other words, if you go there and you're still going to work or commute or do things where you're leaving your little community often, traffic is going to matter. If you're going to retire and just stay in your town and your community, not really travel much, and if you do, you're going to go to the airport and leave and then come back and go back to your town, then, you might be okay. But I do think you're going to have to consider this as an issue. What about the traffic? And what about the taxes? A lot of people are moving into both of those places, guys. Franklin, Tennessee keeps showing up as one of the top. Beautiful place. There are no more deals to be had in that area, by the way. Now, I have seen cute, what we would call starter homes, but even really nice homes still. I mean, certainly you can make it as nice as you want. But 1,200, 1,400 square foot homes, a lot of size homes that you guys in retirement would say, perfect size. I don't want to hire anybody to clean it. I need a single story. I want to be able to walk from my garage into the house. I need to be in a nice neighborhood. What's the price of that town? You can get it in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, $300,000, $320,000. Your property taxes, even if you pay that baby off, they're still going to be $600, $700 a month because that's what they are. Property tax is your main tax in the state of Texas. Same thing in Tennessee, by the way. There's no income tax, but property tax is high. That's how they pay for everything, right? You understand police officers still need to be paid, right? Electricity for the city hall still needs to be paid, and these folks still need benefits and all the other stuff that comes with being a city, state, county employee. So how do they make money? Very simple. Property tax. Schools, property tax. They'll float bond measures. You'll see that a lot in these communities. So if you're going to choose one versus the other and you don't have children, right, by definition, usually in retirement, you don't have kids. You can adopt, of course. Sometimes people do. I understand. But we're going to go off the assumption you're like the 99% of others that have no children in your 60s. And here's the key. No minor children, let's clarify. The key is this. Don't buy in a community that has a good school district. We don't care about that. I don't want a nice library. All right? I don't want a fancy school. You can buy places in Texas. Have you seen them? Where the high school football stadiums rival almost any college stadium I have seen. They live for high school football. These kids that are 12 and 14 and 16 and 18 years old, by the time they become in high school and they start thriving, they're celebrities, some of them. Right? No wonder it's difficult for any young person to focus these days with the internet and the world of video games. But oh my gosh, be a star athlete in a place that you shine. Like ice hockey, right? In Minnesota and Milwaukee and Wisconsin and Michigan, be a hockey player there in high school, and you're just a celebrity. Well, that's football in Texas, folks. Be a 15-year-old young man who's an amazing quarterback, and there's not a lot of parties or company of the opposite sex that you can enjoy. Right? Just the way it is. But do you want to pay for that? Probably not. If you don't care about going to the high school games or it's not in your town. So in other words, do some homework. What side of town you want to be on? The one that has the old school or the new school? No problem. You're paying for it. Look at where you're going to spend time. Go visit. North side of town? But my doctors are on the south side. I got to travel that intersection. I got to go through that every day, every week. Where do I shop? What church do I go to? I'm going to spend 3 days a week at the church, right? There's a Bible study on Wednesdays. There's a Tuesday night small group meeting. There's Sunday school. I mean, right? You're going to spend many, many days sometimes a week. We found it easy to move about a mile closer to our church because my wife was there almost 6 days a week. Between the different Awanas and different events and girls groups and young men's groups, etc. And with three kids, there's always something going on. So we spent a lot of time back and forth. So the extra mile closer brought a quality of life to our family that mattered, because there's three stoplights in between that time. Right? So decide where you're going to live, but do your homework. Because quality of life matters. And I will tell you, just like I mentioned before, it's about purpose. You guys better have somebody somewhere counting on you. You better have something to do that's important, because you have a wealth of knowledge, and I don't want you giving that up. Thanks for being part of the show, guys. Have a blessed day and a wonderful rest of your weekend. I'm Arif Halaby. This is the Total Financial Hour, on your place for news, talk, and information. This is AM 870, The Answer. Learn about financial power, the total.